top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 363 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Caliber. This is a Scottish film, so I guess you could say caliber. It's a film of great caliber. But yeah, it's this one is often par for the course, I think, anyway, is that the horror genre is really spread globally, and each country can reflect and amplify and accentuate the particular horror sensibilities to its audience. And there's a lot of differences and, well, also similarities too about what scares people where. And I think, generally speaking, of course, I still think with a caveat that we're living in a bit of a golden age of horror. I think that generally speaking, you can get a lot more interesting and a lot more depth of character type films in the horror space when you go abroad. And I'm thinking of the, I think, highly transcendent and transgressive and impeccable effort out of Turkey that I've lauded, I think, ad nauseum. Baskin, a gut-muncher, epic, bombastic, over-the-top, sinister, evil, devilish production involving cops who find this portal into the gates of hell. It almost fuses Italian sensibilities with Del Toro-esque visual stylings. It's just absolutely phenomenal. And when you look at something like the South Korean effort called Parasite, and many other films, whether it's horror or thriller, you can always find a lot of depth and a lot of charm and a lot of innovation and a lot of spirit when you go elsewhere. And while this isn't a conventional horror film, Caliber does lead you down a certain path to set out a series of expectations that it upends throughout its runtime and continues to challenge and veer in different directions at every turn, which is really quite remarkable. And when you get films like The Ritual or something like Ari Aster's Midsommar, you have a set of, folk expectations that are both met in those two efforts. And similarly to Rituals, you have at the core of this film, a male bonding buddy adventure. And it's almost like the film is setting up, it actually admirably sets up a premise of a devil may care, fun, wonderful road trip that's at ostensibly the height or the pinnacle of a life-changing moment of one of the protagonists' life, and that's one of Vaughn, who's a Scotsman who I believe is from Edinburgh, and who is about to become a dad. So, like, the celebration is in the offing, and the mood is spirited and uplifting, and he's going to go with his longtime buddy named Marcus, who's a Edinburgh, one of these venture capitalist banker types. And the two of them go back a ways away, and you have really a wonderful and very accurate and very compelling, spirited dialogue between the twosome that really sets the tone as they're venturing off into the Scottish Highlands for a hunting trip. Now, being this a Netflix production, you got to have the de rigueur overhead drone shot. And again, everyone is just making use of this drone technology, but with good reason, because once again it establishes the disconnect between the two worlds from which they're from, and you have the you ain't from around here, are you kind of vibe, and it's this kind of rustic rural horror that you see on these shores with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and others, but it goes all the way back to the Wicker Man and tons of exemplars like this. And in order to really pit one set of dynamics against another, you really have to establish who you're dealing with. And what you have is a couple of, I mean, they're not exactly urban sophisticates or like, effete pushovers by any means, but Marcus and Vaughn, this is where, again, this caliber movie really diverts from the other types of films I mentioned too, is that they're up for adventure and they're not just, they're willing to stick their noses out, and I'm making a pun there because nose features prominently in this film, but they are not the typical type of character you get in The Wrong Turn, where it's some sort of sports car driving guy who doesn't know how to take care of himself in the backwoods. No, these guys will stand up for themselves and take on all comers. Now, again, when you, in order to make a proper emotional and otherwise investment in a film, I think it's very important, even if you do it in brush strokes rather than broad ones, to be able to invest in the characters. And even if you have only 5 minutes to do so, there's a few touchstones, a few little moments where you can really see how people connect, and you can really find a way that these people can in turn connect with an audience. And this is what director Matt Palmer, who also wrote this feature, does wonderfully, as the twosome go out and, you know, again, there's ball busting, there's banter, and within 5 minutes of dialogue between Marcus and Vaughn, you really get a depth and breadth, a sense of really, really good sense of their relationship. Now they go out and immediately you get the stark contrast of rural versus urban, and this is really, really well done. And again, it speaks to the depth of characterization and also the locales with which we're not familiar for foreign films. And speaking of Wrong Turn, you become accustomed to the backwoods, whether that's West Virginia or, the Appalachian Trail, which is so often the setting for these things, or again, rural Texas with the buzzing flies and all that. There's a certain set of cultural expectations that come from like a more exploitation type urban, rural, rustic, bucolic city / dichotomy, right, that you don't get when you are venturing into Scotland. Scotland, when you think about it, if you ever do at all, it's maybe a Scottish Kiss. No, the Glasgow Kiss, pardon me. Or the novels of Irvine Welsh, you really typically think of it maybe in terms of Michael Myers and parodies, but it's typically an urban, tough environment that at least we're exposed to, and steel mills and rugged beauty of the cities and castles and terrible weather, and that's the kind of thing. You're not taken out into the Scottish Highlands as often as you should be. But I'm thinking of maybe another example would be A Dog Soldiers, which is a fantastic film that's set in this particular area as well, where you have a bunch of army cadets running different drills and being set upon by werewolves, which is just the other example that really stands out to me as featuring this inimical landscape, really. Maybe An American Werewolf in London too taps that similar vibe, so that there's two very, very strong efforts that make use of this in environmental backdrop and to amazing ends. I mean, An American Werewolf in London, for example, features a pub that is werewolf denizens hang out in, and similarly in Caliber, these two friends happen upon this small town, you know, whose name escapes me, right? But that's where they're going to go stalking, is the term is. And when you think about Sherlock Holmes's cap, it's a deerstalker cap. And so you can use the terms, as the movie does, hunting and stalking interchangeably, although stalking isn't as prevalent on these shores as it would be over there. But you get this wonderful rural pastoral pub in this small town. It's just so imbued with just warmth and energy, and that's something that's immediately turned on its head as the twosome enter in. And they're warned. I mean, they're seen as outsiders right away, especially when it pertains to two of the village women, one of whom is Kara, and one of the pub denizens isn't exactly welcoming to this twosome from the big city, and just says, you know, listen, stay away from this woman, right? And it's, you know, there's almost fisticuffs that ensue. And it's interesting, like out of my own personal experience as a city dweller going into some of these small town cloistered settings, I've found that despite the perceptions that these small towns are warm and welcoming, in fact, the opposite can often be true as well. I've spent some time in rural Upper Michigan, which is about a 12-hour drive north of here into the upper reaches of real hunting, stalking, hunting territory, bear, deer. It's a real hunting-oriented community. I'm talking about near Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, in Manistique, Michigan. And when you enter upon that territory, I mean, I had some connections because a friend of mine has family there. So we were able to name drop the surname of this family, and everyone in the town of several thousand people, maybe a couple thousand, would actually know who you're talking about because everyone knows your business. But we met with some resistance when we were drinking at the local pub as well, because the tough guys in the town took us for a bunch of, you know, what I guess they would call ponces in the UK, but what, like, just sort of fat wimps from the big city who, you know, work in cubicles and who can't do manly things like change a carburetor, or, you know, fix an exhaust manifold or whatever the hell you want to talk about it. But they assumed erroneously that we were just like weekend warrior jerks from Detroit. You know, little did they know, and little did it matter, actually, that we are from Toronto and we are Canadian, because it didn't matter to them as across the border. What the hell was the difference, right? You are what you were, and that is some sort of city interloper. You're in an area that where you're met with some antagonism. This sets up a really, really good dynamic in Calibre as well, because you have this almost, you know, brawl breaking out right in the middle, right in the as the two are setting down to enjoy some scotch and enjoy some beers, and there's just, you know, one of the locals, one of the ostensibly, I guess, more outgoing and warm-hearted locals, Logan, steps in and prevents a brouhaha from breaking out right in the pub. So you get this dynamic that is just totally different from what you'd expect. And although they do touch on this as well in the similarly themed Wrong Turn. But again, make no bones about it. Make no mistake. You know, Calibre is more on the thriller side of things, even if it has a horror setup and a horrifying denouement. So again, Marcus and Vaughn, they're ready to go stalking, they're ready to go hunting, and as is par for the course in many of these things, you have a leader and a follower, and as that befits his profession, Marcus, the Edinburgh businessman, is the more aggressive and the more pushy and the more alpha of the twosome, whereas Vaughn is the, they don't say what he does for a living, he's the more retiring sort and the one who's less likely, less inclined to want to put a bullet through the brains of a doe, you know what I mean? So that dynamic, although the bridge is, you know, they're able to overcome their maybe a cultural divide there. The twosome go way back, and they went to again, I think it was boarding school, I want to say, together, because one of the townies says, oh, I don't take you guys for a boarding school types. Again, because they're able to overcome their, I guess, sort of more posh background and speak to the locals in a way that they can understand. And speaking of understanding, I mean, there's the thick Scottish brogue in this film, but it's not impenetrable like you would see in some of the Irvine Welsh adaptations. So if you pick up, you know, you can pick up on the lingo, and you just listen closely enough, and you'll miss a few things, but to my ears anyway, it's not you know, overly you know, the consonants aren't overly you know, caught up in the back of the throat as Scots are wont to do, at least in my opinion. But these two go out on a hunting trip. Vaughn takes aim at a doe's head, and you know, Marcus says, you know, you can do it, and tries to, you know, he's not the most steely of sorts. And it turns out, you know, a young boy steps in front of the animal, and boom, he's taken out in a horrific hunting accident. And Vaughn is understandably just beside himself, and he rushes to the boy's aid and immediately finds out that he's not breathing. The boy's father arrives. I think they're hiking out in this backwoods, and grabs a gun, and I think it was actually Vaughn's own gun. He picks it up and is about to shoot him, or at least threaten to do so, asking what's happened, and Marcus actually takes him out. So this immediately puts the two at loggerheads, because what you have is a dynamic of the moral, ethical, and sober reasoning Vaughn, and then the hothead Marcus, who takes matters into his own hands, literally, by shooting the one witness to the hunting accident. Now, they have to determine what is going to be done. In almost time-honored film noir conceit, they almost have to figure out what to do with a body. So, obviously, Vaughn is the type who wants to tell the authorities, and this whole scenario could have been avoided had he just done the right thing, but he's the one who's sort of bullied, and I think probably into this taking this trip to begin with anyway, as this male bonding adventure. And similarly, you can listeners can check out White Raven, I believe it's called, a Canadian horror film that makes ample use of a BC locale and a bunch of best buds and male bonding and a bunch of young men who meet their demise. That's also a very good one. I think it's called White Raven, but you can check it out on the Really Awful Movies site just to confirm that. I think it's White Raven anyway, but you have the dynamic of the two who are at odds, and it turns out that Marcus is able to strong-arm Vaughn into just burying the twosome and just trying to figure out a way out of this predicament. Now, the town they happen to be staying, they're staying at this incredibly gorgeous old farmhouse Airbnb-type place with a taxidermy deer gracing the walls. It's just an unbelievable setup. And the town is about to undergo some kind of solstice festival. And I think this, and you're going to have to disengage with me at this point because I'm going to introduce spoilers to the proceedings, but this really is an elaborate, I think, red herring that Matt Palmer, the director-writer, sets up in order to ostensibly lead viewers to conclude that what they're involved in, what they're up for is a kind of midsummer slash ritual slash Wicker Man type premise, where you have these townies who are going to be involved in this solstice fire burning ritual, and they're going to find out what really happened to members of their ranks. They're going to track down Marcus and Vaughn, and they're going to skin them alive and do God knows what to them, right? That's actually not the case, vehemently not the case here. So again, you see the moral characters, the one imbued with a sense of ethics and morality, who's Vaughn, but also the townie Logan, who has a hidden agenda as well in terms of wanting to revitalize the town's sagging fortunes, because it's really been hit by, a mass exodus of locals going to, Glasgow or Inverness or wherever it is. I don't know enough about the geography, but the next largest big cities in Scotland, as I imagine they, small towns in the UK face the same challenges that they do here, which just has convincing young people to stay when there's nothing in it for them, really, and it's not a college town or anything like that. So Vaughn and Marcus, well, it's mostly Marcus whose financial expertise Logan solicits when the two meet, and they actually take them out to in this elaborate dinner. So anyway, what you have is this wonderful dynamic, with these people who are from different parts of the country culturally, and interacting and engaging with one another, and the interface between that causing this heavy drama as the townsfolk are attempting to figure out what happened to their missing members of their ranks. So I believe it's actually a distant cousin of one of the protagonists. I can't recall which, but I mean, it's par for the course in these types of towns where you have everyone's related to everyone else, right? You have this setup here where there's a act of vandalism on Marcus's car, their Jeep, and they're forced to stay in the town longer than they would ordinarily want to, which is great because it keeps them in the town, and you have nothing to suspect the townsfolk of anything because they seem, on the whole, welcoming, with a few glaring exceptions in the pub fight and that. But they are invited to take part both in the search for the two missing, or the man and his son, And they're also invited to take part in this big giant bonfire slash solstice type celebration. So they do have to, you know, they are compelled and cajoled into sticking around in this town. And of course, it's far removed from being able to order an Uber or find a sort of bus to get the hell out of Dodge. Not to mention the fact that given that the area was not too far removed from where the duo went missing, that their whereabouts could be traced to that area. And Logan actually inserts himself into the Edinburgh Hunter's business by asking him little pointed and sort of oblique questions as to where they were going. And the movie sets up this scenario whereby you're not entirely sure how much the townsfolk know or suspect that Marcus and Vaughn are actually the perpetrators of this accident slash cover-up. And this sets up really, really intriguing premise, and again veers you off into thinking that this could be some sort of again cult type ritual slaying of the twosome, and they're gonna have their comeuppance at the hands of these grim-faced locals. But that's far from the case, because you have the Kara and Iona, the two young women in the pub, and you have them hitting it off with Marcus and Vaughn, and you almost anticipate Vaughn, the young man whose fiance is newly pregnant. You would almost expect him in the hands of someone else to be maybe swayed by one of the bar women, because you know maybe it's his last chance of freedom, and before he has to deal with the pains of raising a child and into toddler and young kid and all that. So they could have gone down that road, but and they do hint at it in delicious fashion, really, because I think it's very realistic insofar as there's a lot of flirting being done at the pub, a lot of heavy drinking, a lot of pints being slugged back, and you have the potential, I think, for infidelity to take place. But ultimately, Vaughn's character shines forth, and he's able to resist the charms of the bar women. And you know, again, when you have this dynamic too, you actually have the interceder Logan encouraging one of the townies who was very aggressive in fighting the two when they first got there, to actually issue an apology. And he's not someone who wants foreign intervention, whether it's visitors or otherwise, or financially, and refers to them as city twats. So again, just underscoring that wonderful dynamic of this production. And the denouement, without spoiling anything, is just really, really terrific. And in many ways, you can expect, you know what to expect, because there, you know that in some respects, and this is not a spoiler, that the hunters are going to get their just desserts. You just don't know the extent to how or... you know why. You don't know how, and that's kept under wraps till the very last 20 to 30 minutes with lamented the when it comes to the films like Hereditary, darks and movies not actually being dark, but the dark woods, the darkness of the accommodations, the darkness of the bonfire. This is a dark movie when it needs to be dark. And I'm speaking euphemistically as well, because the premise is very dark as well, and is handled with such a deft touch. And again, I'm not familiar with any of these actors apart from the one who plays Logan, one of the de facto spokespeople, or de facto mayor almost for the town, who appeared in Doctor Who and whatnot. And Thor, I think, too, but I'm not familiar with them. But the cast across the board is just dynamite. And you have, the dogs involved in a chase, and you have burying of bodies, you have what to do with a body, a la very Hitchcockian, very gallows humor oriented. You have terrific dynamics set up between townsfolk and the interlopers. You have so much set up for what is a terrific finale, and stay with it right to the end, because you'll really get to come to appreciate and really... In a way that the filmmaker did very effectively, the long-standing PTSD that the characters are going to face post-event. And the events of this night are beyond the pale, really. Is we're going to segue briefly into what I learned, because one of the things I learned is that these guys, it really speaks to how far someone will go to protect a friendship when they're, particularly when it tests their moral boundaries and their... personal ethical prejudices and possible failings. And this does so expertly, I think. Expertly, I would definitely say. And the night hunting is a way that their violation of night hunting protocols without getting the proper permits and whatnot just shows the lack of respect these urbanites have for this community. And they just sort of go in there and think they're going to just go to town and just have a good time, but not really respecting the rules of the road, as it were. There's so much like working its way into the story too, but the almost Kafkaesque way that Marcus and Vaughn are compelled to stay in the community, especially with the one garage mechanic in town who won't be able to fix their vehicle for several days and who's quite rude to them for obvious reasons, and they insinuate that he's overcharging them. And with the parts that are going to have to come from the big city or whatever the nearest town is. And so, yeah, again, with Vaughn and Marcus and their, you know, the tension that's built up, the endless tension, both when they're brought out to dinner with some of the locals who are suspicious of them, and the fact that they have to stay for the party, and just the set against the backdrop of the almost constant drinking and the paranoia that indisputably unique and amazing surroundings bring forth. I mean, this is really a Scotch whiskey territory, I think. I mean, I don't even know. Like, it's hunting area. It's the backwoods. It's an extreme environment. And this town is not really much in the way of being this picturesque, Instagrammable Airbnb location. The streets are suitably muddy. And it's very, very off the beaten path, and you could see how you're being so far removed from anything. It just really sets up an amazing tone, violent, angry townies versus, you know, more erudite, more wealthy, you know, city dwellers. It's just a great, great film. I really, really appreciated this one, not knowing what to, you know, possibly expect. And again, lots of correspondence and overlap between critical lauding and favorable audience reviews, all well deserved. Edinburgh International Film Festival Best British Film Director Actor nominees and winnings for 2018, very well deserved. I thought it was really terrific. Edinburgh Reporter critics said it was exhausted but exhilarated after a taut 100 minutes of drama. And that's taut would be the word. I mean, this is so, there's not a beat missed. There's so much tension being driven up. Like, you can almost, I mean, just biding time and how they're playing with the chronology and just keeping these two just suspended in limbo in the middle of nowhere. It's just unbelievable. And you know also that they're two men of means too, but there's no amount of money that can get them out of this predicament. I guess they could have, you know, again, all the I's are dotted because they can't really be as prime suspects in a hunting accident. They can't be expected to be bribing any townies to drive them out of Dodge to get them out of there and into safety, because there is no safety. I remarked to my wife that if this were me and this had happened, I would have had to just hightail it out of there, out of the UK entirely, I would say, just given that you face the prospect of a manslaughter charge or some sort of involuntary manslaughter or accidental death of doing like 10 to 20 years in prison, and there's no way out of it. And you have no alibis. You're just basically stuck there, and you've made your presence known in the town pub where no one would darken its door, certainly no outsider, for months at a time. And you'd be fingered by just anyone in the pub at the moment. So there's no way out. You have no recourse, nothing to do. This is heavy drama, folks. Caliber is high caliber stuff, and it's masterfully told. Horror slash thriller, leaning heavily toward the latter. I'm going to give this 4 out of 5. This is pretty much must-see filmmaking that makes amazing use of the time we're in right now in these parts, and this, which is the transition between autumn and winter. Just bang on, wonderful stuff. Check it out. Continue to check out our podcast, new episodes of which are uploaded Friday. If you're a listening pleasure, don't forget to grab a copy of both our books, as you'll really enjoy them. And we shall talk to you soon. Take care.